Welcome back to the Business of Government Hour. I'm Michael Keegan, your host, and our guest today is Dr. Reggie Brothers, Undersecretary for Science and Technology at the U.S. Department of Homeland Security. Also joining us from IBM is Angela Carrington. Dr. Brothers, the Science and Technology Directorate within DHS plays a critical role in addressing major homeland security threats, as you've outlined. Would you sort of give us a sense of your strategic vision for the department? How are you reshaping the department, the directorate? And more importantly, I understand when you came on board, you had five priorities you wanted to focus on. Could you give us a sense of what they were?
Absolutely. So the five priorities as follows. I wanted to develop a vision or goals that I mentioned a little bit earlier. I wanted to produce an actionable strategy. So I didn't just want to have a text that gets put on a bookshelf somewhere. I wanted something to actually lead us to be able to do something that we need to do, lead to these visionary goals. So if the visionary goals are 15, 20, 30 years out, then what do we need to do in the next 5 years to get there? So I wanted to produce this actionable strategy. The third thing was foster an empowered workforce. Fourth, deliver force multiplying solution to homeland security stakeholders. These are again, our operational components. And then the fifth, I think very important, is energize a homeland security industrial base. And I say this because, as you know, the Department of Defense, which has been around for decades, has a very effective, powerful defense industrial base. Homeland security doesn't have that, particularly from a research and development perspective. And I thought that one of the roles that I want to do, one of the things I wanted to improve, is that homeland security industrial base for science and technology. So those are really the five priorities I set.
And you touched on the visionary goals. Can you outline those goals and kind of reiterate how you got there?
Yeah, sure. So the these were derived from internal discussions, internal to my organization, S&T, with discussions with the components, and then further with input from the public through a website. We have five. The first is screening at speed, security that matches the pace of life. We have a trusted cyber future, protecting privacy, commerce, and community. Enable the decision maker, actionable information at the speed of thought. Then responder of the future, protected, connected, fully aware. And the final one is resilient communities, disaster-proofing society. I think what you can see is where these essentially transcend, they take the entire space of our mission sets and try to say, for example, for the first one, screening at speed, security that matches the pace of life. In the simple case, going through an airport and not having to divest yourself of belts and shoes and things like that, right? But yet, we haven't sacrificed any security. Right? In cyber, a trusted cyber future. What's the fundamental issue in cyber? Do you trust your networks? Do you trust your devices? Doubt that, right? So how do we get to that point? How do we do that? And so these goals were set up to drive us to really think hard about where we want to go, and then how do we actually, and then the next step, the strategy I mentioned earlier, is how do we actually start getting there?
And so with that as the jumping off point of getting there, the activity of research and development, I was interested, what constitutes R&D within the DHS context? And how have you sought to redefine it since you've taken over?
R&D has changed. I think I mentioned this a little bit earlier. In the 1940s, R&D really was defined by Dr. Vannevar Bush. And he wrote a letter to the president, President Roosevelt. The president asked him, you know, what should the country do after World War II to continue to have the same type of innovation from the industrial base that he saw, the country saw during the war? Vannevar Bush wrote back an impassioned article called Science, the Never-Ending Frontier. And in it, he outlined a strategy that led to the founding of the National Science Foundation, that after Sputnik led to the founding of NASA, led to DARPA. And it kind of defined the way we do R&D today. Fundamental shifts started happening around 1980. The fundamental shift was the level of funding for applied research shifted primarily from the government to private practice, to industry. I think that really starts changing the game as we think about it. I think the types of innovations that we're seeing in some of the smaller companies, I think starts changing the game as well. Now, that's not to say that we're not seeing innovation in larger companies, because of course we are. But I think the point is that our job, as I mentioned earlier, to protect the country using our understanding of science and tools of technology, is to reach out to all the creative individuals that we possibly can. These creative individuals are now in different places. Right? They're not just in government laboratories. They're not just in our universities. They're in other places. And so I think fundamentally, we have to acknowledge that fact. We have to develop avenues and pathways to get to these people. And we also have to develop ways to invest in them. And I think, you know, while we have typically used a number of different investment vehicles, It's clear that sometimes it takes too long for the operational tempo of these non-traditional performers. As such, we've had to think about how do we structure ourselves internally. I think there's three different aspects of the structure. One aspect is how do we structure ourselves within S&T ourselves to most effectively and efficiently do our jobs. How do we structure ourselves within the DHS enterprise is the second one. Then how do we structure ourselves with respect to our outward-facing input points? Right? How does industry reach into us? I know when I was in industry, I found it difficult to reach into DHS. And I think it's important that we figure that out. So simple things. You know, we've redesigned our website to make it easier for people to understand who to talk to. What are they interested in? In terms of investing, we're trying to experiment with different types of ways to invest in non-traditional companies, using prize challenge authorities, using so-called other transactions authorities, using ideation events, for example, as a way of telling our story. Because one of the challenges we've heard from industry is, what are you interested in? Right? I'm not sure we've done a very good job of telling industry of what we're interested in. I think in the Defense Department, you asked this question earlier about some of the differences. There's a history of industry understanding what the Department of Defense's problems are. We don't necessarily have that history here. Instead of being 60 years old at the Department of Defense, we're 10 years old. So we're still developing. And I think it's important that everyone understands that. So part of our role right now is having the best structure internally for dealing with, as I said before, this need to have longer-term research as well as have flex capacity for pop-ups, these kinds of things. Have a structure within our DHS enterprise so our researchers can properly understand what challenges our operational personnel really face, not just what they think from an engineering perspective, but what they really face and what the concept of operations are, so that the kinds of capabilities we developed are not just technically relevant, but operationally relevant as well. And then how do we actually share our problems with industry and develop investment vehicles that work in the same kind of timeframes that are effective for their own business models?
Dr. Brothers, you mentioned the DHS enterprise. Can you touch on what are some of the existing challenges and capability gaps that you see in the overall Homeland Security enterprise?
So I think, let me give you some broad areas. We've just set up something we called our integrated product teams. We're actually setting those up. These integrated product teams are developed to define just what your question is. What are the capability gaps that exist across our components? So we've set up five of these, right? So we've got aviation security, border security, cybersecurity, counterterrorism, and biological threat security. We have an existing work called our First Responders Resource Group, which develops capability gaps for our first responders, police, fire, emergency, medical, etc. So those are the large areas. And I think that you can find a multiplicity of threat areas within those. But when I try to talk to industry and people that want to create with us and for us, those are the big areas that we're talking about.
So I would like to sort of peel back some of those visionary goals that you outlined. And one in particular you mentioned was delivering force multiplying solutions as a high priority, and focusing those on high priority areas. What are you doing in this area specifically?
So let me parse that up a little bit. Part of the problem is, goes back to the prioritization piece. Mm-hmm. We have, as everyone does, limited funds. You know, we don't have unlimited funds for investment, but we have an extremely broad spectrum of threats and missions that we're supposed to service. And then when it comes to force multiplying, we have to be fundamentally well connected with our components, mm-hmm. or else they won't be multiplying force at all, right? Again, I go back to these IPTs that I mentioned earlier, the integrated product teams. But I also want to talk to the Pioneer program that we've started. We started something called Pioneer. Pioneer program is something that is meant to get our people into the operational domain. One component of the Pioneer program is called embeds. Mm-hmm. This is where we send our people to actually work and live with border protection, border patrol agents, with Coast Guard officers, with transportation security officers, et cetera. So they can understand day-to-day, hour-to-hour, minute-to-minute, what these officers' challenges are. I think fundamentally this gets to something I like to talk about, which is user-producer innovation. I think one of the challenges that smart people have, that smart creative people have, is to go back into their workspaces, come up with what they think is a great idea without having understanding of whether it's operationally relevant. So let me give you an example of that. When I was doing some work with Department of Defense, I found, you know, people that were trying to use modern commercial cell phone type equipment for Blue Force tracking, for tracking where people, for soldiers are, for example. And it seemed like a great idea until they realized, well, you know, during the daytime, it's kind of hard to see the screen. It's hard for Army Rangers, for example, to use these small styluses. Of course, ruggedness is a challenge. And so what turns out to be what was originally a really good idea had some serious operational challenges to it. Now, all those can be mitigated. But going in, it's a lot easier to make the most efficient use of your money if your engineers and scientists understand some of these constraints early on. And so that's what we're trying to do with this embedding program. We also have a sprint program where we put our scientists and engineers for a short period of time with, let's say, we've already done it with the Coast Guard. And then we also have something we're trying to put our scientists and engineers into industry. Again, this is starting to try to foster this homeland security industrial base. Mm-hmm. Put them in industry so they can start understanding the real concerns that industry has, because industry is under certain constraints that many people who have not been exposed to that and have only been in the government don't really understand. I think another issue we're trying to do, and I mentioned this earlier in terms of structure, is we're trying to improve our structure within the homeland security enterprise itself. And one way to do this is to take a model from corporate models, which some have a centralized corporate component, which looks at research component, which looks at cross-cutting areas of concern of technologies. And then a lot of times these corporations will have a research and development component at each one of their business units, maybe communications, maybe platforms, et cetera. The way this works is that the central research facility tends to be looking at more early stage research. The business units tend to be looking at more market-facing research for the next products, for example. And then the corporations that have been most effective actually have this rotation of their people between these outward-facing research and development organizations and the central research organizations. We're doing the same thing. And so we're setting up what we're calling our innovation centers. And we're starting one with the Coast Guard to put our people with the Coast Guard and to help transition, because this is a big problem with research and development, as you know. How do we actually transition our technologies to our end users? And that's what, borrowing from the corporate industry model, we're trying to use that as we structure ourselves within the homeland security enterprise.
So, Dr. Brothers, what are you doing to identify and prioritize operational requirements and capability gaps?
So this goes back to the integrated product teams, where I mentioned we have aviation security. I went through that, the list. Aviation, bio threat security, cyber security, counterterrorism, first responders, and border security. And the way this works is that each one of these integrated product teams, or IPTs, is led by a component head, not S&T. And these are operational components. So that way we come across with cross-component priorities in these particular mission sets. Then those priorities are then sent up to what we're calling our Senior Research Council. That is chaired by my organization, S&T. And then that list is prioritized. So that's how we're going to prioritize our investment strategies coming up. We've just started those. So that's a work in progress.
That's a great, I mean, if you could touch on that a little bit deeper, because it transitions into my next question, sort of like identifying the gaps. But how does the Senior Research Council and your efforts sort of target and make strategic investments a high priority? How are you doing it? You can get into the how-to.
So again, this is a work in progress. We're just starting this.
Okay.
Yeah, so we have not started this yet. This is, IPTs were actually in operation under Admiral Cohen, who's one of my predecessors. So we're resurrecting those, if you will. And we expect to have some of our first outputs coming up next calendar year. These will then be integrated. So let me back up for a second. The Secretary has made quite an effort in what he calls his Unity of Effort initiative. I think there's an excellent initiative that the Secretary is doing. I think it's working well. Part of that initiative is a Joint Requirements Council. Mm-hmm. The Joint Requirements Council is set up with the components to develop what these joint requirements are for acquisition. We're doing a similar thing for research and development. And in that, I'm distinguishing between a requirements for acquisition and capability gaps. So to be clear, a capability gap may be something like we need greater surveillance capabilities in some area. A requirement could be I need to buy a particular type of camera, let's say. So Joint Requirements Council is really concerned with requirements for acquisition. Our IPTs are concerned with capability gaps. Mm-hmm. Obviously, you can see where we're feeding back and feeding forward between the IPTs or the Senior Research Council and the JRC. So that's how we match into the acquisition process.
Well, that's a great segue, because that's internal to the DHS components and how you're working across the enterprise. You've mentioned this throughout the conversation, the Homeland Security industrial base. And I have sort of a threefold question for you. One is, how are you energizing your relationship with that base? How are you facilitating idea exchanges with that base? And more interestingly for me is, what are some of the new non-traditional outreach mechanisms you're using? So energize, facilitate, outreach.
This, again, is a work in progress. Mm-hmm. I think, let me give you an example.
Sure.
We've started a Silicon Valley presence. Mm-hmm. The way we're doing this, quite frankly, is based on conversations that a number of us have had in Silicon Valley. And let me say at the outset, we're just starting in Silicon Valley. We realize there are many other areas of innovation. So I do want to talk about some work we're doing in Dallas and Chicago with accelerators. I'll get to that. But one way that we're having this conversation is doing an ideation event. So recently we did an ideation event or brainstorming event in Silicon Valley on the Internet of Things and the security of the Internet of Things in particular. Now, I think that it's important for us going forward to continue to have these kind of conversations, because the more specificity that we can give creative people, the more efficiently they can help us solve these kinds of problems. So one way we're going out is with these ideation events. Another way we're going out is through prize challenges. So prize challenges, as you know, is an authority that a number of government departments and agencies have. We're one of those. And we can go out with a question and a problem. And one of the questions we brought up was for first responders. The question was, given this market in wearables, how can that be applied to the first responder, particularly with an understanding of their need for indoor location awareness, for an understanding of what their vital signs are, these kinds of things, communications, indoor communications? And here's what we did. So we set up a challenge in that area. We actually got a great response for that. But then we did something else. We said, you know, one thing that's very different, this gets back to your question about DoD versus DHS. Well, another difference is a lot of our products are off-the-shelf products. We don't necessarily have tremendously different technology than you'd find in the commercial world. A lot of times they'd be modified for us, but a lot of times they are off-the-shelf. So the question comes up then, so if we have to strategically shape our shelf, how do we do that? One way we thought to do that, and again, there's an experiment, is an accelerator, right? So the business accelerators. So we said, you know, we had three questions. If we invest in an accelerator, number one, will anyone respond? Two, if they respond, will it be relevant, important responses? And three, will we be involved investing in viable companies after that? So we work with two accelerators, one out of Chicago, one out of Dallas. And coming through this program that started about a year ago, and we had kind of the final exam, the graduation ceremony, if you will, I think it was September. We had 18 companies. And so some of the results were fascinating, what they came up with. And of these 18 companies, many of them are already in discussions for second-round financing. So I think what we found, I think if the number, if I have the number correct, there's like 150 companies actually applied for this. So if you think about the three questions we asked, all of those were answered affirmatively. Right? We had 150 companies respond, so there's interest. We had 18 companies that came up with great solutions. The second question was answered, and would they have relevant, important solutions? And the third question is, are they viable? Well, they're in discussions with companies for second-round financing. Well, right now the experiment seems to be working. So that's another way that we're reaching out. A third way is a vehicle that the government has called Other Transactions Authority. Now, Other Transaction Authority, OTAs, were set up to provide a way to get to non-traditional companies. And these are defined as investment vehicles other than contracts, grants, and CRADAs. That's why it's Other Transaction Authorities. And so we're setting up OTAs to do just this, to work with non-traditional companies so that we can actually get investment to them in the time constants that's important to their people. So those are some of the areas that we're trying to reach out.
What is the purpose of the National Conversation on Homeland Security Technology? We will ask Dr. Reggie Brothers, Undersecretary for Science and Technology at the U.S. Department of Homeland Security, when our conversation continues on the Business of Government Hour.